Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to A Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, along with my co-host Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. Just Cause Coast to Coast brings you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. How you doing tonight, guys?
Hey, Sam, doing real good.
How you doing, guys? I'm wonderful.
Awesome, awesome. Hey, we got a great lineup tonight. We got Jay Arrington from the Maryland Daily Examiner. He's going to be joining us a little bit later. We have also an exoneree moment that's going to be coming up a little bit later where we're going to recognize Herman Wallace of the Angola 3. And then also we're going to, just dive into the IRP 6 case. And, that's our case study that we're going to be using as we go through and talk about judicial injustice. One of the things that we always like to give is a little bit of background on A Just Cause and a little bit of background on IRP. But before we do that, I'm going to give a disclaimer. Cliff and I are not attorneys, and A Just Cause Coast to Coast is not a program that provides legal advice. The opinions expressed by the callers are not necessarily those of A Just Cause Coast to Coast. So please contact your legal professional for specific legal needs. Again, we'd like to thank you for joining the program. Callers, we have a number that you can call into if you'd like to join the program. If you have questions, comments, we'd love to have you join in. The number is 347-205-9620. Again, that's 347-205-9620. So, Cliff, as we use the IRP case as our case study, let's jump into give a little bit of background on IRP 6 and the IRP solutions.
Well, IRP solutions started in February 2003, and it was marketing its flagship case investigative life cycle, the Silk software solution, to major federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies. Prospects included the Department of Homeland Security, Department of Justice, and New York City Police Department, to name a few. And the IRP executives were convinced that they were on the verge of closing business with one of these, at least one of these major governmental agencies, until the business was raided by the FBI in February of 2005. And IRP Solutions was raided for allegedly scamming staffing companies. And what really happened is the company was responding to requests from the government to modify their Silk software and got behind on paying invoices. And in order to modify their software, IRP had to use temporary staffing companies that specialize in technology professionals. So IRP brought these temps on board to work on the software, but when the business didn't close as quickly as it thought, that's when invoices went delinquent and allegations of wrongdoing came up. So this is primarily a story about the vagueness of federal fraud law and how federal prosecutors can use the vagueness of that law to indict, try, convict, and sentence ordinary people who are just conducting normal business practices. And at the base of this, the IRP 6 case is a corporate debt collection case that got criminalized by an overzealous FBI agent and overempowered assistant U.S. attorney.
Well, you know, Cliff, as you talk about that, it's obvious that this is a corporate debt collection case. It is a civil matter that got criminalized. Now, a good thing that came out of that, if you can say something good came out of that, is the fact that a just cause was established.
Yes.
Now, the IRP 6, they include Gary Walker, David Banks, Clinton Stewart, who is your brother, Demetrius Harper, Kendrick Barnes, and David Zappolo. Now, As the IRP 6 were going through the legal challenges early on in this process, they realized that, something is just not right about this. You know, we always talk about the fact that we are naive, or we were naive, to how the process works. And there were so many things that went wrong in this case with regard to due process. And it opened our eyes to the fact that, people who are overzealous, people who are overreaching, they can take a small case and blow it up. And so, that's exactly what happened here. And so the guys, they realized that, we need to expose this. We need to get it out there about the IRP solutions case. We need to get it out there as to what the federal government prosecutor, Matthew Kirsch, is trying to do to us. So they were very instrumental in setting up A Just Cause. Now, A Just Cause is a volunteer organization. It was set up in 2005. You talked about the fact that IRP Solutions was raided by the FBI in 2005, and we'll dive deeper into the story. But in 2005, you know, like I said, the IRP6, they decided, you know, we need to do something about this. We need to expose these kind of things that's going on. So the mission of A Just Cause is to join in the fight against overcriminalization of trivial and obscure acts and provide competent legal representation in criminal cases where misconduct is suspected on the part of any officer of the court. You know, and we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. We like to use that term in the sense that everybody in the federal government or everyone that works in a U.S. attorney's office or everyone that sits on the bench, that there's something wrong with them, that every FBI agent, there's something wrong with them. That is just not true. But in this case, there is something that is terribly wrong. And so, as we stated before, you know, we're going to use this as a case study moving forward. We're going to take a look at several different other cases. Also, later in the hour, we're going to have the AJC Radio News that's going to come up. And so let's get right into what we're going to talk about tonight. Hey, is Jay Arrington on the line?
Hey, Jay. You all right? Good to hear from you again, Jay.
So, Jay is with the he's a staff writer with the Maryland Daily Examiner. And, Jay, you have done a stellar job as far as writing a series on the IRP6. And what, you're on part four now, I believe?
Yeah, I posted part four today, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Jay, for the listeners who are not familiar with it, first of all, give them the website for the Maryland Daily Examiner. They can go out there and they can search the previous versions. Also, they can go to www.a-justcause.com and read your earlier parts to your series. But if you would, please give us a little background on what part one, two, and three were about, and then we'll just let the conversation go and talk a little bit about that.
Okay, well, the website for the paper is Maryland, as in the state of Maryland, Daily, as in Daily, Day, D-A-I-L-Y, Examiner, EXAMINER.com.
Okay, thanks, Jay. We got that.
Okay.
So let's talk a little bit about your thought processes behind writing a series on the IR6.
Well, again, Sam and Cliff and Ethel, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here again with you tonight. And as I stated to you previously on other occasions, it is my intent to tell a story because, in any courtroom process, you know, the person who tells the best story generally wins the case. And I don't mean stories as in lies, but stories in a way that will take the listener or the reader down the path every step of the way in the process so as to virtually have them live the story so they can see it in their mind, feel it in their heart, and feel the passion for it as we do. So I basically wanted to start out with the process that was undertaken from a debt collection aspect to a criminal aspect and asked the question, what was the underlying motive for not using a civil process versus, you know, trying to criminalize the activity when there was not warranted. And so I started out with that, and I wanted to, lay it out, break the ankle, if you will, of the person who ran with the ball, and that actually began with Susan Holland, who was the president and of ETI, a staffing company, and her connection to Greg Goldberg, an attorney for Holland and Hart, and their connection to the U.S. Attorney's Office, and how from one way, you know, if you look at it, the article that I wrote today basically laid it out in the form of a play and actors and,
right.
And laid it out so you can carry you from one act to another. Because initially looking at this, I had not noticed that Ms. Holland's letter to Demetrius Harper actually came after Goldberg hand-delivered his letter to Matthew Kirsch. And for me, that was very striking because, in a sense, I had to ask myself, was this an attempt for them to disguise their relationship?
Right.
If you understand what I'm saying, were they attempting to disguise their relationship by having her pretend that she was still going to pursue this as a civil matter when, in fact, they had already set the wheels in motion to have the U.S. attorney pursue it as a criminal matter.
And, you know, Jay, on that point, we actually just came across a letter, an email that Ms. Holland had actually distributed out to a professional organization that she was a part of. And she clearly articulates in there, she's throwing out all kinds of allegations about IRP Solutions Corporation, which are totally unfounded. And then she proceeds to suggest to some of her peers to not do business with IRP Solutions Corporation. And then she further states that if you have done business with IRP Solutions Corporation, then I suggest that you file a lawsuit, a civil lawsuit, against IRP Solutions Corporation, just as we are in the process of doing. And when she says just as we are in the process of doing, she's talking about ETI. So even through this entire process, and you have other items, and we have other things that we have disclosed previously that clearly state that this is a civil case.
Exactly. And that's astounding. And that's astounding and on the face of it, because there are so many other facts of this case that would lead you to at least ponder the question, what was the underlying motive that sent this from a civil case to a criminal case? Because even if you take it like this, Goldberg delivers his letter to Matthew Kirst. The next month, Susan Hollis writes a letter to Demetrius Harper threatening to ruin IRP's good name with the staffing industry, muddy their name with the federal government. This was all in 2004. Almost a year later, in January of 2005, FBI Special Agent John Smith's request from Mr. Gary Hilberry, who was hired as a consultant with IRP.
That's correct.
He was a retired special agent in charge with the U.S. Customs Service. He was hired by IRP as a consultant for their Silk software. Mr. Smith met with Mr. Hilberry. FBI agent Smith met with Hilberry. Afterwards, he sent him a letter requesting all documentation that as it related to his relationship with IRP. Within a month's time, Mr. Hilberry responded with a signed affidavit in which he provided all the information that Agent Smith requested. But in addition, what is really eye-popping about the affidavit is that he included in their statement, and I'll quote, he says, and he's speaking about the fact that he and two other gentlemen, a Mr. Epke and a Mr. Fusilier, who were retired FBI agents who Mr. Hilberry had brought on board because he felt so confident about what IRP was developing, the software, he brought them on board. And even though they had not been paid because of contractual things, I'm sorry?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, on that, you know, they were working for free.
Right, you know, he says in his affidavit, and I'll quote, he tells Agent Smith in his affidavit, he says, on numerous occasions, the three of us would discuss the pay issue in private, speaking about himself, Mr. Epke, and Mr. Fusilier. He said, we agreed that IRP Solutions had a viable law enforcement product and appeared to be moving forward to acquire state and federal law enforcement contracts for their products. So we decided to continue to assist in their efforts. Now that begs the question, how is it that three seasoned federal agents of the United States government can be duped into thinking and can be brought into a scheme to conspire, to commit mail fraud, wire fraud, and racketeering under the guise that they were trying to sell a bogus product?
Right, and when you also look at it, Jay, the issue more so surrounding that, you have these guys who retire federal agents, been in the business over 20 years. They can spot a crooked deal when it's going on. You have Agent Smith who was there for maybe 18 months at the time of the raid, why would he feel like his experience was super speed?
Hey, Jay, when we return, we'll jump back into that. There's some things we want to talk about, that other things that were going on during 2004 with IRP Solutions. You're tuned to A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we provide education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We'll be right back after this message.
I can solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize a message.
I can motivate your audience.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can teach your children.
I can boost your bottom line.
I can add value to your workplace.
I could be a loyal and productive employee.
But I can't put my skills to work for your organization
if I'm not given the opportunity.
If you don't recognize my talents and ability.
If you don't hire me.
If you don't have an open mind and a workplace that's open to everyone.
If you don't realize that America works best when everybody works.
What can you do?
What can you do?
What can you do?
You can remember that it works.
It's what people can do.
It's what people can do that matters.
Nearly 50 million Americans have disabilities. Capitalize on their talents with employment practices that benefit everyone. Learn more at whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
I was 18 and... sold drugs for money. Didn't want to live on the high. Ran away with drugs in my pocket. Hoping cops would catch me. No place to go. All I wanted to do was deal drugs, collect that money, and burn. I had no hope for nothing at all. Didn't care for anything or anyone. After doing some time, I was ordered to do probation.
Can you imagine spending 20 years of your life in prison for a crime you didn't commit? Neither could I until I got the opportunity to portray Betty Ann Waters in the film Conviction, telling the real story of how she freed her brother Kenny. Sadly, what happened to Kenny happens far more often than you might expect, but together we can stop it. Please join me in helping the Innocence Project fight injustice. Go to innocenceproject.org to make a donation and get involved.
You're tuned to A Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, along with my co-host Cliff Stewart, Ethel Lopez. On the phones, we have staff writer with Maryland Daily Examiner doing a series on the IRP 6 case, Jay Arrington. Jay, how you doing tonight? Jay, are you there?
Hi, Sam. Thank you. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
We got you.
Okay.
So, Jay, I want to jump back to something you were talking about. You were kind of giving a chronology of some of the events of 2004. You know, what's interesting about that as well, and you were talking about the letter from Susan Holland, the activities that was going on at Holland and Hart and so forth, the activities that were going on with Special Agent John Smith. Well, you know, 2004, there was a lot of activity going on with IRP Solutions at the federal government. You know, the IRP Solutions made its first trip in the fall of 2003. And so from that time, from 2003 all the way through 2004, there was quite a bit of activity going on. You know, I always have to reflect back on the fact that, you know, the Department of Homeland Security contacted IRP Solutions in the late summer, early fall of 2003, and basically said that we understand that you're developing a software. Now, we have to look back at the events of 2000 or 9/11, and where the 9/11 Commission actually stated that law enforcement agencies at the federal, state, and local level could not communicate effectively. They could not collaborate. And one of the things that's called out in the 9/11 Commission report is a module or a need to manage confidential informants. Well, there was a module that was developed by IRP Solutions in the IRP Solutions software. The software is called Case Investigative Lifecycle, and it's commonly referred to as SILC as an acronym. But one module in there was called the Confidential Informant Module. Well, you know, the Department of Homeland Security, they wanted IRP to refine that, and as you were stating, the retired federal agents that were actually working at IRP were assisting in what the Department of Homeland Security said put a federal face on it. So these federal agents were actually assisting in making the modifications, and as Cliff stated at the top of the show, you know, that's when they engaged the staffing companies. But I had to bring out that point that in 2004, there was a lot of activity going on. And then also, Jay, in the fall of 2004, there was an industry day. Now, that's where the Department of Homeland Security, DOJ, FBI, they put on a what they call industry day. That's where they call in all of the top defense contractors and say, here's the next project that we're going to be working on. And it was called the FICMAS. It was the Federal Information Case Management System. And for the listeners who want to do a little fact check on us, you can go out there. It's online, FICMS. And IRP Solutions was part of that. When the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI showed the major defense contractors what they were looking for, basically they were showing what IRP had already developed. And further, they stated, like sideline conversations, they told some of these big players, hey, if you want to get involved in this deal, the company that already has something, and we're not talking smoke and mirrors, but the company that already has something is IRP Solutions. And believe it or not, Jay, the phone started ringing off the hook from the Lockheed Martins of the world, the SAICs of the world, the EDSs of the world. You know, these types of contractors were reaching out to IRP. But, you know, we'll get into talking about the teaming agreements and all that kind of stuff where, you know, these kind of companies didn't want to have solid teaming agreements. And Gary and David of the IRP6, you know, they were not about to sign something that was going to allow these guys to come in and just step in and take their software. So, you know, there was a lot of activity going on. That goes back to what you were saying, Jay. It doesn't stand to reason that you have federal agents working in the building and someone is running a scam.
Yeah, and you know that's a great point that you bring up, Sam, because it just solidifies the suspiciousness of the whole thing. Because again, we're talking about people in the United States Attorney's Office who were basically saying that the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Justice and Lockheed Martin and IBM and all of these other firms that had already had government defense contracts, that the Department of Homeland Security and Department of Justice essentially were stupid and didn't know what they were talking about. You know?
Right, exactly.
That's like telling Hostess they don't know what a Twinkie is. You know? Come on now. Now how can you make that leap that these people, and especially when you consider the fact that the FBI in 2005, some 17 months after Goldberg had delivered his letter to Matthew Kirsch, Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch, 17 months later, a gentleman by the name of Mr. Robert Grabowski inquired of the FBI and asked the FBI to investigate IRP because they owed him a debt, I believe, for staffing.
Right.
The FBI responded with a letter from Robert Powers, agent and special agent in charge, that was signed by the supervisory agent in charge, Gene Anderson, responded to Mr. Grabowski and said to him, we are not going to investigate what you ask us to investigate because we see this is a civil matter. This is a matter for civil court.
Now, Jay, look at that timeline. That timeline is after the raid, right?
That's what I'm saying. So it's after the raid. It's after the letter was delivered to Kirsch. It's after the raid. And the FBI themselves, after the raid, even admit that there is no criminal activity going on here. So
which
what
makes
was
the smell even more.
Right. So now the pile is beginning to steam because now you're wondering what's the impetus? What is the underlying motive? And what exactly, how did they abuse this process to get it from a civil matter, in a civil court, like in front of Judge Judy, to in front of Judge Arguello? How did
exactly.
they do that? How did that
right.
happen? Because it was a people's court matter.
That's right.
It's basically what it was. How did they do that? You know, and what was the impetus for that?
And you know, Jay, and along with that, you know, as we've had discussions before, we found out that the special agent in charge for Colorado, special agent in charge of the FBI in Colorado, was not even aware that this raid went down. And so, you know, how can you have a raid that, and let's qualify this now, you have a raid of, what, how many agents was it, Cliff? You were there. 21, 22 agents?
Yes, over 20 agents armed.
How many IRP people were there?
At most 18, somewhere between 15 and 18 people that were working in the building that day. So a greater than 1-to-1 ratio of armed agents to workers that day.
So, Jay, you know, you even look at that. You have something of that scale, something of that magnitude going on, and the special agent in charge of the whole state does not even know what's going down. The media...
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that we appreciative of folks like yourself, Jay, and other folks that are out there at other newspapers and blog talk radio and, you know, online bloggers and so forth, is that you guys get it. And you understand that there is something terribly wrong with the process here, and you are assisting in getting the story out. The mainstream media, on the other hand, did not do that. The local media where IRP Solutions was headquartered in Colorado Springs did not even show up. And when we tried to reach out to them to get exposure, because if you're not doing anything wrong, you don't mind going to the media and saying, hey, we need coverage on this because someone is trying to railroad me and I need to get the message out there that I'm being railroaded.
It's the same thing.
It's just like, you know, having federal agents in your building. You're not going to have federal agents in your building if you're running a scam. If you're doing something crooked, you're not going to draw attention to yourself in the media.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you have federal agents, cars, jackets on, all over this building, and no media shows up?
But you know the funny thing to that, too, you guys, is that there's a credit union right there next door, and I think they own part of the building or something.
Right. Yeah, they own the building.
There you go.
And something's going down in your building, and you're the leasor.
Okay.
And you're not going to question what's going on?
That's my point.
Folks, you're listening to A Just Cause Coast to Coast. This is Sam Thurman, your host, along with Cliff Stewart, Ethel Lopez, and on the phones tonight we have Jay Arrington, staff writer for the Maryland Daily Examiner. If you'd like to call into the program and participate, if you have questions or comments about the judicial process, please call at 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. Jay, we're talking about the process here that's been going on, and so, you know, just several things that just don't point to the fact that this thing makes any sense.
And also, real quick, Jay, another point that I would like to add, you know, basically off of your article where you're saying, yeah, John Smith is going after this affidavit, saying that it's a purported software company after he had talked to Hillberry, he had talked to Fuselier, he had talked to Epke. He also had already been to Department of Homeland Security. Talked to several people there, interviewed them, asked them, have you seen this software? What's going on with IRP? What type of business are you guys talking about doing? Same thing at New York Police Department. Had dealt with a retired, investigator there, detective, and knowing, yeah, we've seen the software. We've seen these demos. They've done modifications. They've added what we wanted. When we asked them to customize, they did it quicker than any of these other large companies. And then the large companies that called them up, that called IRP up, they're telling the FBI, yeah, absolutely. We contacted them, trying to get in touch with them to do team agreements. Like Sam stated, he still wrote up a lying affidavit to go to a judge about getting a search warrant.
If you'd like to participate in the call tonight, call 347-205-9620. 347-205-9620. This is the Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Jay will be right back with you here in a moment.
Today, innocent Americans are standing trial for crimes they didn't commit. Today, innocent Americans are writing for help from a prison cell. Today, hundreds of Americans have been exonerated of crimes they didn't commit. Researchers believe that at least 40,000 innocent Americans still sit behind bars. For them, the answers do not come easy. A Just Cause seeks true balance and accountability in the judicial process, ensuring that innocent men and women are not convicted and sentenced to prison for trivial, obscure acts that are otherwise not seen as crimes. For more information on how A Just Cause may help you or how you can get involved to stop overcriminalization of innocent Americans, visit www.a-justcause.com or call 855-529-4252. That's 855-529-4252.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, I'm Sam Thurman, your host, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez joining me tonight as co-hosts. Also on the phones, we have staff writer Jay Arrington with the Maryland Daily Examiner. That song you just heard, Jay, that song was written by Tiffany Stewart. She's the daughter, it was composed and sang by Tiffany Stewart. She's the daughter of Clinton Stewart, one of the IRP6, and it was actually written by Cole Stewart, and that's Cliff's son. And so the title of the song is Soon It Will Be All Over. Cliff, how old is Cole?
Cole is 12. He'll be 13 in February, and he wrote that song a little bit after he turned 12.
And so, you know, Jay, you know, the kids are, and as we've talked before, when a person is incarcerated, it doesn't just affect the person who is incarcerated. It affects their families. And you know, so the fact that Clinton's daughter is playing on the song and singing on the song, you know, and her dad is locked away and has been now for about 14 months. And so that's why we're fighting so hard as part of a Just Cause in order to, you know, get the guys home and get them back with their families. Callers, you can call in at 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast. So, Jay, we left off before the break. We were talking about some of the things that just don't stand to reason as to why, you know, IRP would have been running a scam, why we have six innocent men sitting in prison right now. Jay, you're writing a series in the Maryland Daily Examiner, and I like the heading that you use is Under the Radar, the Curious Case of the IRP 6. So, Jay, back to the conversation we were having as far as some of the things that just don't make sense. Cliff was talking about, you know, Special Agent John Smith had already vetted the fact that IRP was legitimate, yet he still pressed forward with getting a search warrant and raiding the business.
Yeah, and you know what? And see, that, again, we're right back where we started, actually, because every step that they took to prove or to validate their actions was refuted by someone in their own organization or someone who used to be in their own organization. And by that, we can go right to Cala Forensics, the firm that was hired to analyze the software for the prosecution.
That's right.
Okay, Mr. David Vilfer.
Don Vilfer.
Don Vilfer, who was hired by the prosecution to analyze the software. He was a retired FBI agent, and he was head of the white-collar crime unit for the FBI for years, for about 15 years. Okay?
And also, Jay, he's a certified fraud examiner.
Certified fraud examiner. And in his affidavit and in his response to them after he examined the software, he clearly says, the CLC, the SILC software, does not appear to be vaporware. In other words, it does not appear as though the developers created a fake program. Okay? Uh-huh. He also goes on to say, and this is crucial, he says, the version of the software that we reviewed, where is it? Okay, I lost it. So we evaluated the software contained many notable features, making it a functional product for the intended consumer, which basically says whoever they were showing it to, DHS, Department of Justice, New York City Police, Philadelphia City Police, whoever they were showing this was a functional product for the intended use of that consumer. So there was no vaporware there. And he also says at the time of the search warrant, this product was functional. So when the FBI came in and raided IRP, at that time, the product was functional.
Jay, let's stop right there and let's talk about that raid just a moment, you know, for the listeners who are not familiar with that part of the story. And we won't spend a whole lot of time here because we want to cover other aspects of the story. But even on that, you know, the search warrant called for financial records. And the FBI comes in and they spend over 10 hours in the IRP Solutions building. And Gary and David basically point out to them where the filing cabinet is with the financial records. Yet they go about throughout the entire building copying all of the hard drives of every computer in the building. Cliff, share a little bit more about that as far as, you know, some of the things that happened on that.
Yeah, because when they came in, you know, first they were reluctant to show Gary Walker and David Banks the search warrant for basically what they were coming for. But when pressed a little bit, they finally showed it. It said, you know, they were looking for financial records that were for IRP Solutions and DKH Enterprise, and also for, you know, correspondence between those companies and the staffing agencies that they were doing business with. So if that's the case, why do you need to copy every file off of the facilities manager computer? You know, the guy who's over janitorial, he doesn't have any financial records. You know, when you then they go and they copy every developer's computer, they copy every server, they copy every, you know, the development server, the test server, the you know, the basically all of the file systems in the entire building. That is not going to get you financial records, while at the same time there is a filing cabinet that was put in the middle of the floor that said financials on it. They never touched that filing cabinet. Instead, they copied everything down. Now, you're knowing a development server there for building software is not going to have financial records on it. Why are you copying that information down? And that was just one of the things that they did. You know, when during the raid, they had, you know, the FBI agents, we say they came in there, and they came in with, they were armed and with this great show of force. You know, you have the administrative assistants, they were all female, and they're slamming handcuffs down on the desk, and you want to go to jail today. And it's like, why do these type of tactics and why use these type of tactics? What's going on? And doing our research as a Just Cause, we found that these are the type of tactics and the type of force that they show when they're doing a raid on, you know, some drug dealer, some gun runner. And then on top of that, if that wasn't degrading enough, they corral all the African-American employees. They take us and they put us in the break room and put an armed FBI agent on each door and say, if you even want to go to the restroom, you have to be escorted.
But, Cliff, there were no witnesses because the media wasn't there.
Right. The media was nowhere to be found. So if they wanted to come in there and say, well, hey, you know, they got some guns and drugs. We shot them all. They're all dead. But guess what? We got some drug dealers off the street. I mean, this is an IT shop. This is a shop where you have developers, testers. You have professional IT engineers, architects. Why do you need to come in there armed in such a way and show this show of force? It's totally unnecessary. And like Sam said, you know, the media is nowhere to be found. The Federal Credit Union is next door. They're knowing what's going on. Mm-hmm. And when you would think, like, okay, there's FBI vans all around downstairs with big FBI all over the front of the size of the van, somebody's going to say, hey, local media, who chases down an otter for 2 weeks that escaped from the local zoo, there's like 8 FBI buses down here in front of this company. What's really going on? Do you guys have any news about what's going on here? But, you know, they continued on, imaged all the computers, you know, took the copies of them, corralled us in a break room. Now, the FBI doesn't frisk anybody. That's for the local police. They don't do that. They're not there to go through your pockets unless they think you have a gun. Well, they got me out in the hallway. They're going through my pockets. They take my cell phone, open it up, taking the SIM card out. I'm like, I don't have any financial records in my cell phone, in my wallet. What is this about? You're there to collect this information, which, you know, we found out that's not what they really came there for. They came to try to exploit and steal the software.
Yeah. It sounds like it's for the – I'm sorry, Ethel, go right ahead.
Oh, no, you go right ahead, Jay. That's fine.
No, I was going to say, when you asked the question about their the purpose for this use of force, it served their purpose because it was for a purpose of intimidation. They want
exactly.
to intimidate people to keep their mouth closed about what's going on. That's what that's all about. That's like laying the whip by the slave, you know. And you know
yes.
what's coming if you don't do this and you don't do that. That's the symbol for the handcuffs. We know what that's all about. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, it just adds to the piles on, as we like, for lack of a better word, all the things that make this case such a blatant abuse of power. And just to give, and I'd like to just go back a minute to what Mr. Vilfer said about this program. I'm going to read.
Well, Jay, we need to, let's hold on that point. We come back.
Go right ahead.
we'll pick up on that. You're listening to AJC Radio, where we bring education, awareness, and information about the judicial injustice.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness
are all courtesy of the heroic men and women of the United States military.
They give so much, and they ask so little.
I'm Joe Bontaine.
I'm Jack Scalia.
I'm Nick Searcy.
I'm Bonnie Jo Laughlin.
I'm Scott Elrod. Please help me thank our heroes by doing something.
Donate your time, talent, or gifts
to groups and organizations devoted to our troops and their families.
Visit a veteran's hospital.
A smile, a hug,
a shoulder, a handshake,
or even an attentive ear goes a long, long way.
Quite simply, give.
They'll sincerely appreciate it.
And it just might do wonders for you, too.
Remember, remember,
freedom isn't free. Get involved.
Give back now.
God bless America. God bless America.
Didn't talk about it.
I've got to go home.
Oh, come on, Carrie. We're going to a new place.
She wants to go home, right? Go.
Whoa.
You okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm fine.
You sure?
Relax.
What's a few beers?
If you don't stop your friend from drinking and driving, you're as good as dead. Drinking and driving can kill a friendship.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
Do something good for your community.
Reuse bags and bottles and always recycle.
Help us collect 1 million pounds of food.
Help people prepare for natural disasters.
Do something about homelessness.
Anyone can be a rock star in their community.
So then do something.
Do something.
Do something.
Do something.
Visit dosomething.org to find out how.
Go home. Oh, come on,
Carrie.
We're going to a new
place.
She wants to go home, right? Go. Whoa.
You okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm fine.
You
sure?
Relax.
What's a few beers?
If you don't stop your friend from drinking and driving, you're as good as dead. Drinking and driving can kill a friendship.
This is the Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, joined by Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. Also on the phones tonight, we have Jay Arrington, staff writer with Maryland Daily Examiner, doing a series on the IRP6 case. And callers, if you'd like to call in, please call in at 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. Jay, just before the break, you were getting ready to talk about Don Vilfer, who is the certified forensic analyst who did an analysis of the IRP Silk software.
Yes, I was just going to add, you know, some of the comments that he made about the software in his response to the prosecution, and also to let the audience know that the prosecution, once they read this letter from Mr. Vilfer, they refused to call him as a witness because he refuted their whole case against the IRP.
How do you refuse your own witness?
Yeah, he recused their own. He refused to call his own witness because he did not support his premise for the prosecution. And some of the things that he said about the program, basically, it was everything that the DHS and the DOJ and other police departments were looking for, especially in light of the 9/11 Commission's report, because he says there the program allowed for gathering information about crime scenes, manpower assignments, arrests, notifications, vehicles, weapons, evidence, searches, and other relevant data. The program allowed for the addition of photos and files. The follow-up tab within the program allowed for assigning and tracking leads in the investigation and information regarding interviews. Prosecution phase tab allows for the tracking of witness and district attorney information, exhibits, and discovery. It appears this portion of the program could also be used by investigators or prosecutors. So this was a viable law enforcement product. And everybody who came in contact with this product, be it staffing agencies, retired FBI, retired Customs Service agents, everybody who saw this program, this software application, knew it was a viable law enforcement product, which is why they continued to assist IRP. It was not anything IRP was doing other than accommodating the DHS and the DOJ and their request to put a federal face on the program.
Exactly.
That's all they were doing. That was the only thing that was holding everything up.
And we also, you know, to our attorney friend in New York, this point that you're making about Don Vilfer and Cal Forensics, he said that is a crucial part of the case, and there's no way that the judge should have allowed the prosecutor to remove that evidence. He said that exculpatory evidence right there was enough for this to be shut down. The fact that you claimed it was a scam, you claimed it was a fraud, and you claimed that the whole thing was based on the fact that there was no software being developed, that there was no product. When you have a product and you're marketing it and you're borrowing money to do that marketing, that is called business. That's how business gets done. Once you refute the government's assertion that there was no product, the whole case should have dissolved. The fact that IRP had the Silk software, that Don Vilfer of Cal Forensics basically validated and verified that, yes, at the time you guys did the raid, you were wrong. You should not have messed with them. This software was working, and it would work for the people who would have been their customers. He said, the attorney said that information right there is enough to throw this whole case out.
And you know what, guys, and as I listen to all of this and as all of it come together and knowing piece by piece, and you can see the story and know exactly what happened here, it takes me to the jury.
Yes.
It takes me to the jury. So what happened with the jury that the jury did not get this?
Well,
because
I think what
because they never heard it.
Exactly. They never got IRP side of the story.
Well, that is that.
They never heard the story, Ethel. That's exactly why. And it also begs the question, think about this, guys. Think about this audience. They raided this place in 2005. They did not hand down an indictment for 4 years.
Right. Almost five.
Almost 5 years. And when they tried to indict the first time, they couldn't because that grand jury said, this is a civil case.
That's
exactly.
Right.
This is a civil case. Why are we here?
Well, it's like everybody who sees the evidence says, this is a civil case.
Exactly.
What are you trying to prosecute these guys for? But when Matthew Kirsch, the prosecutor, when he did his second grand jury impaneling, he called one witness, his crooked FBI witness, Agent Moen, and he allowed him to tell every lie he wanted to on the stand. Well, if you only hear the one side of the story, mm-hmm. who's defending IRP Solutions at the second grand jury?
That's
absolutely
correct.
Nobody. They're there, the FBI and Kirsch are there to tell every lie that they want to skew the story, lay it out in whatever way. They could have said this whole thing took place on the moon. Who was there to refute that information? And that is a part of the justice system that needs to be abolished. These secret grand juries that we're calling a group of people and we're going to tell them what we want to about you so that we can go arrest you. And all we need to do is tell us, yes, you have the permission to go do it.
The call-in number is 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, and I was going to say, well, that's why you hear people say that a prosecutor can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich.
That's right.
That's why they say that, because the prosecutor has the wherewithal and he has the power to deny testimony by a potential indictee. You know, he doesn't have to let them come in there and testify at a grand jury. That's up to him to allow that. That's why they have that power. But again, like I say, it begs the question, if I don't tell you the other side of the story, if I tell you that a coin has the same side on both heads, but I don't allow you to verify it by looking at it,
mm-hmm.
then you're never going to know.
And that's exactly. So true. That's so true. And then you look at the point, well, how do you come to the decision that you've come to with no evidence?
Right, because the evidence is skewed. The evidence is skewed to favor them. Now, had he allowed Don Vilfer on the stand, that would have blown the whole thing out of the water. And it makes you wonder, what were they doing for 4 years to take them that long, almost 5 years, to get an indictment? And what? Why did they proceed after the FBI had told them in 2005? The FBI mm-hmm. told them in 2005, basically, you do not have a case.
Right.
We are not going to pursue an investigation because this is a civil matter. They told Grabowski that, and I'm asking myself, why did Grabowski contact the FBI after Susan Holland and Goldberg had already contacted them, or Goldberg had contacted them? I have to assume, rightfully or wrongfully, that Mr. Grabowski contacted them to try to get the FBI to change their mind about what they had already decided and possibly told Goldberg.
Probably so.
So they were piling on, so to speak. And the FBI came back and said, well, you know what? You don't have a case. There's nothing here.
Exactly.
You know, so that explains why the supervisors were kept out of the loop. Because
right.
the supervisor would have put a kibosh on the whole thing, you know. This is basically what they call black ops. This is not sanctioned by the government.
Exactly, and that kind of thing, you know, it's not supposed to be happening in
right.
this type of process. And
That's
and you
right.
know one of the things too that we found out is that even in order to get that indictment and some of the evidence that was presented later on, they took the FBI interviews that were initially done by John Smith, and then Agent Mullen goes back to several people and interview them again.
Mm-hmm.
Jay, these interviews do not look the same. They're talking to the same people, but the interviews do not come back with the same accounts. Mullen's interviews are much later, and it's a mystery as to how people they can recall something so vividly many years later.
Exactly.
It was like they were crafting this thing all along to make it seem, you know, to shape up a case in order to they orchestrate the case.
Yeah, because they're not asking open-end questions. They're asking, didn't you see him with this in his hand? Yes. Or did
it was leading.
Know? Yeah, they're leading questions. You know, they're leading them to the answer that they want them to respond with. That's what that
right.
is all about. We also need to make clear for the audience that Goldberg, Walsh, who was the U.S. attorney at the time, Walsh, Goldberg, and Matthew Kirsch, and Judge Aguayo all worked for the same law firm.
Well, Kirsch did not. Yeah,
no, Kirsch worked with Goldberg in the U.S. Attorney's Office, but Walsh, Aguayo, the judge, and Goldberg all worked for the same law firm.
Exactly.
At one time or another. Now, what if the jury had heard that?
What if the jury had heard that?
You know, we know
she made sure that information stayed out.
Yeah, for the interest of full disclosure, truth and prosecution, we all worked for the same law firm at one time. We used to sit in the same lunchroom. We used to visit the same steakhouse and have drinks together and toast
exactly.
each other
okay.
after we won a case or got somebody thrown in jail for the rest of their life.
You know,
they didn't write the Law and Order series because they made it up. You know,
and you know, Jay, as far as like the judges
made up.
As far as the judge's involvement, it's not that the IRP-6 didn't file a motion for Judge Arguello to recuse herself. But she
Hello?
Basically said, you there, Jay?
No, I was being sarcastic. Hello? Yeah.
Oh. Hey, you threw me there for a second. I thought we lost you. But, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, she didn't recuse herself. And she said that, well, I really didn't know Goldberg that well. But Goldberg is quoted in the deposition saying he knew her very well. Hey, this is a Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman. And we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial I'll get it out here in a second. Judicial injustice. When we return, we'll be joining Jay Arrington with the Maryland Daily Examiner right after AJC Radio News with Tara Goggins.
This is Tara Goggins with AJC News. A recent article by the Richmond Times-Dispatch reports 1 in 9 U.S. inmates is serving life term. That's almost 160,000 prison inmates in the U.S. 1 in every 9 are serving life or life without parole sentences. That's a 12% increase from 2008 to 2012. A new report by Business Insider suggests the NSA's top leadership is expected to step down soon. The director of the U.S. National Security Agency and his deputy are expected to depart in the coming months. U.S. officials said Wednesday in a development that could give President Barack Obama a chance to reshape the eavesdropping agency. Army General Keith Alexander's 8-year tenure was rocked this year by revelations contained in documents leaked by former NSA contractor Edward Snowden about the agency's widespread scooping up of telephone, email, and social media data. Now, in current developments of the IRP 6 case, a Just Cause discovers new evidence critical to the lawsuit against a federal court reporter in Denver, Colorado. Federal court reporter Darlene M. Martinez appears to admit to omitting 200 pages of court transcripts that are deemed critical in the appeal of the federal conviction of the IRP 6. In related news, Denver attorney files a petition requesting the federal courts to direct federal court reporter to release 200 pages of missing transcripts critical to the appeal in the IRP 6 case. A petition for writ of mandamus is filed by attorney Gwendolyn Solomon for the IRP 6. Requesting that the courts resolve issues of federal court reporter Darlene Martinez omitting 200 pages of transcripts from the criminal trials of 6 Colorado businessmen. For details on these and other stories, visit www.a-justcause.com. This has been AJC News. I'm Tara Goff.
Thanks, Tara, for the news. This is Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, information about judicial injustice. This is Sam Thurman, joined by Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. Tonight we have Jay Arrington, staff writer with the Maryland Daily Examiner. Jay is doing a series on the IRP 6, and we're kind of dissecting that case. At the top of the show, we talked about using the IRP 6 case as a case study in judicial injustice. We will be bringing you stories about other cases that are in the news, and tonight, if call in, the number is 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. Before the break, we were talking about that nasty web of folks and how they are all interwoven together, and how that just makes for a messy situation in this case, Cliff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it when you really look at it, and, you know, Jay made some great points saying, why did, you know, first off, why was it waited until 2009 to get an indictment? Why did you wait for almost 5 years to actually go after the man? Well, the question is, we're going to stifle you doing business, and at the same time, we're going to keep you from getting any employment so that when we do wait for 5 years, we can come after you, and you're pretty much, you know, at the point where you don't have money to get proper legal representation, because we've gone in the industry and stifled you from, you know, basically getting jobs that would get you good pay from selling the software. I mean, Matthew Kirsch was in contact with the Philadelphia Police Department when IRP Solutions was the cusp of signing a contract with Philly PD. I mean, when you look at the evidence and, you know, the interview that the FBI did with the Office of the Inspector General, and when they say, yeah, we would have signed a contract with IRP Solutions if the prosecutor, Matthew Kirsch, had not told us that an indictment is coming down. This is not they have been indictment. No, an indictment is coming down. This was before the second grand jury was even impaneled. And when you have situations like that, it just really, really is disgusting and really shows how the justice system, when you the bad apples in the barrel can really turn it against you and really twist your life up.
And Cliff, I'd like to expound on that situation that you're talking about as far as in Philadelphia. You know, David, I always say he's a tenacious businessman. And so he was always seeking business opportunities. And, you know, it's a situation also where IRP Solutions was striving to meet their debts and was striving to close business. And whenever they got to that point, then you had Matthew Kirsch going behind them. Now, in Philadelphia, this was a situation where Motorola IBM were failing, really, at a contract. David found this opportunity, reached out to the deputy mayor there in Philadelphia, and got the audience. Gary and David went, did a demo, and they were ready to get engaged. And as you stated, the city of Philadelphia was ready to sign on the dotted line until they received a phone call basically exactly. saying that these guys are getting ready to be indicted. And then also, on top of that, one of the project managers for IBM, he was provided, I don't know where it came from, but he was all of a sudden was provided with some smear camp information about IRP. And he goes into the city of Philadelphia and says, you know, is this the type of people you want to work with? Are these the types of businessmen you want to work with? And so he was smearing them as well. You know,
what
I can respect.
This
year
was in 2000.
Well, it was before the indictment.
Before the indictment. I think this was like 2007, maybe 2008.
It was right before the indictment.
Yeah, it was at least 6 months before the indictment.
Yeah, well, see, you know what the purpose of that was? Because if they had gotten contracts, they would have been able to pay the money.
Exactly, and that was always IRP's ultimate goal.
They wanted to show, and see, part of their premise for their case was that they never intended to pay the money.
Exactly.
Had they paid the money, it would have blown that out of the water, too. You know,
and also, Jay, the judge would not allow that Philadelphia situation to be used as evidence. Why can I not tell the jury that we were still trying to pay our debtors, but Prosecutor Kirsch, he went to Philadelphia and told them not to do business with us?
Well, see, you know what? He's injecting himself in somewhere where he had no business being.
Exactly.
That was outside of his jurisdiction anyway.
That's called impeding. That was impeding their ability to do business.
That's impeding a person's business ability to do business and to gain and to pursue a livelihood.
Exactly.
That was outside of his jurisdiction. The judicial system has no role in that.
I think that falls under due process, does it not?
That's right, because what he's doing...
Pursuit of life, liberty.
Right. He's impeding a person's right to life, liberty, and a pursuit of happiness. That violates the First Amendment, the Constitution. And not only that, it's the public's business to do that if it's going to be done, like they did with O.J. You know, he couldn't get a job because the public scorned him. It's not up to the prosecution or the judicial system to be involved in that. But again, we know what the purpose was, because had they gained employment and got a contract, not only would it have given them the opportunity to pay the money, but it also would have again shown that the product was viable.
But you know what, too? I mean, that goes to the point as well that these guys didn't even get a job to support their families because you know, they impeded that. You know, everywhere they went to work, you know, somebody showed up. Matt Kirsch made a phone call or did something to contact the employment and had these guys terminated. And it happened the same way with, you know, right now NBC is saying there's no way that they're going to touch our story. You know, okay, you're not going to touch the story. You are owned by Comcast. You know, some of the guys were seeking employment with Comcast. And when Matt Kirsch found this out, he told them, he made a call to tell Comcast not to hire these guys, you know, because of this situation. So how are they, everywhere they went, you know, they either lost their jobs or did not get the job because he was impeding them with being employed. How are they supposed to take care of the family?
Yeah, but why is he surveilling their
everywhere. everywhere they went.
Yeah, but why? But that begs the question: why is he surveilling them? Their movements when they're trying to get a job.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what, Jay? The hiring manager at Comcast sent Demetrius Harper's resume around the company with the word felon on his resume. Now, there's a connection here as to, first off, where do you get that Demetrius Harper is a felon? That is a lie. There wasn't even an indictment down yet. And now, all of a sudden, his resume is going around the company saying he's a felon. Nobody pick him up. Manager, pick him up. If you see his resume come from another company, don't deal with it.
And you know, Jay, this is all about bankrupting people when they're faced with legal battles. And as we were talking about, with Kirsch impeding their ability to do business, now they're going around blackballing them, ensuring that they cannot get hired. It's all about ensuring that people are going bankrupt so that they cannot get competent legal representation. Right now, Jay, and you could pull this one up, in Reuters yesterday, there was an article that came out. The U.S. Supreme Court ponders pretrial asset freezes in criminal cases. That's in Reuters. And, you know, the U.S. Supreme Court is looking at that right now. It's like, okay, what is your motive for freezing people's assets? And the Supreme Court is actually kind of split on it. You got all kinds of discussion going on about it. And this thing was brought about by a case in Florida where these folks have assets and they would like to select their own attorney. The federal government is trying, or I would say the U.S. Attorney's Office that's trying to bring charges against them, is trying to freeze their assets. Their argument, the defendant's argument, is that this violates their right to counsel under the Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution. You have the right to counsel, but if you have the means by which to go out and get your own counsel, get someone that you know is competent and you can pay for it, why not be able to pay for it? We lock your assets, and if we shut you down and we blackball you and we force you into bankruptcy, then guess what? Guess who's representing you, Jay?
Exactly.
Yeah, the people that they want to have represent you.
That's it, exactly.
The same people that's on the same payroll they're on.
That's right.
Yeah. Same, like, listen, remember what I said the other night? It's like when I used to sell cars. When my family had a friend that wanted to buy a car, they would bring them to me. Because by bringing them to me, they would know that I would take care of them. That's my guy in the dealership. A public defender is their guy in the public defender's office. He's going to wink, wink, and do what they want him to do. He's going to do his best not to give you the best representation. He's going to share any information. He's going to violate attorney-client privilege at every turn, but you have no recourse to prove that, but you can smell it, but you can't see it, but you can smell it. You know what's going on. You know, they're blacklisting you, they're blackballing you, they're interfering with your... That's a violation of your civil rights to interfere with my, to impede my ability to make a living just because you want to prosecute me.
Exactly. And, you know, Jay, even with the IRP 6 case, you know, a lot of times folks ask, well, why did, if you look at the case and you go out onto www.freetheirp6.org, you'll see where the guys represented themselves pro se. We're always asked the question, well, why did they represent themselves? Well, the thing was that the attorneys that were assigned to them, the court-appointed attorneys, were not doing their due diligence as far as, you know, digging into discovery, going after the witnesses, going and doing interviewing, following up on some of the stuff that the FBI was saying that and accusing these guys of. You know, when you see this kind of thing going on, the guys actually wanted to get a meeting with U.S. Attorney John Walsh, and they put together a proffer and was ready to go in to meet with the U.S. attorney. Jay, the court-appointed attorneys refused to go to a meeting with them. They sat on opposite sides of the table and told the IRP 6 that they were not going to go into a meeting with them. So, you know, all of that just led up to a formula for hand-delivering you, over, just like Goldberg hand-delivered his package to Kirsch. The court-appointed attorneys were ready to hand-deliver the IRP 6 over to the prosecution. Hey, Jay,
go ahead. And also, you know, when you look at, you know, they wouldn't do, they would, the court appointed attorneys would not act on any of these things. And then they had stifled them from getting money to have any viable attorneys. It's like, so only thing we want to hear from you is that you're going to do a plea. And then they wouldn't go to John. They wouldn't go in with John Wall to the with the defendants to John Wall. And John Wall says, without your attorney, I will not speak.
This is the Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. When we come back, we'll be rejoining Jay Arrington of the Maryland Daily Examiner. Also, we have a special guest, Ron Edwards of Edwards Notebook Radio Commentary. We'll be right back.
When does it stop being partly cloudy and start being partly sunny? Why is the word abbreviation so long? Are English muffins just muffins in England? Why is it called a washing line and not a drying line? Do fish get thirsty? If ghosts can walk through doors, why don't they fall through floors? Do you yawn when you sleep? If prunes are dried plums, how do they make prune juice? Why do doctors leave the room when you change? They're going to see you naked anyway. Do bald chefs wear hairnets? How much deeper would the ocean be if all the sponges were taken out? Do you believe someone who says they're a chronic liar? Why is sandwich bread square and sandwich meat round? Life's full of hard questions. Ask one more. You might just save a life.
Hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. He looks black.
Did you see what he was wearing?
A dark hoodie, like a gray hoodie.
I think the hoodie is as much responsible for Trayvon Martin's death as George Zimmerman was.
Do I look suspicious?
Do I look suspicious?
Am I suspicious?
This guy looks like he's up to no good, or he's on drugs or something. It's raining and he's just walking around looking about.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
You have to recognize that this whole stylizing yourself as a gangster, you're going to be a gangster wannabe, well, people are going to perceive you as a menace.
I am here to continue the research to fight cancer.
To protect, sir.
To prosper in real estate.
I am here to be a pediatrician.
I'm here to protect my children and my grandchildren and my grandchild.
To fight for justice.
To write the next great American movie.
To give a voice to the voiceless.
I am here to foster a generation of young black entrepreneurs.
I am here
to live. To live.
I am Trayvon Martin.
I am Trayvon Martin.
I am Trayvon Martin.
We are Trayvon Martin. It's time to wake up. This could happen to you. This could happen.
Welcome back to the program. This is the Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. This is Sam Thurman with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. Also joining us is the staff writer from the Maryland Daily Examiner, Jay Arrington. And Jay is writing a series, the Maryland Daily Examiner, about the IRP 6 case. Callers, you can call in at 347-205-9620. 347-205-9620. Joining us on the line is Ron Edwards of Edwards Notebook Radio Commentary. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well, and obviously you guys are doing pretty well.
And I've been enjoying, you know, just listening into the broadcast. And I want to just say that my heart goes out to the fellows that are in prison unjustly, and that to me this is indicative of a much bigger problem. Our government has gotten too big and too out of control, and for too long we, the people of America, have not been learning about our unalienable rights and what position the government should be in regards to their relationship with we, the people. And as it's continued to grow in power over us and just swallow up our unalienable rights and just abuse us in so many ways, and this is just indicative of the direction that our country is heading in and has been heading in for quite some time now.
Absolutely. And, you know, Ron, I spoke with you the other morning on we appreciate you having us on. And when we look at how the justice system just, you know, carte blanche goes after who they want to. They indict who they want to. They take the law. They twist it. They grind it into powder, and they basically bake another cake out of it. The law is one thing. They grind it back down and say, we'll build it up to what we need it to be to indict the person that we want to put on the hook, to catch the person who's done absolutely nothing wrong. I mean, with all the information that we got tonight about, you know, the news that shows how many innocent people are in prison. We got the IRP6 situation. We have all these different people that, you know, sit in cages and they rot for years and years and years. You know, we have the exoneree moment, and we talked about the you know, the Herman Wallace case, where he sat in a cell, solitary confinement, for 41 or 42 years in solitary confinement. How is that justified? And you know, there's nowhere in the Constitution that the Founding Fathers would have basically said, if a man needs to go to solitary confinement, you can hold him there for 42 years. There's no way that was what they intended to lay out when they first began this country. And it's appalling. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, Cliff, you're exactly right. And I did enjoy talking with you the other day. Well, speaking of the Founding Fathers, when they laid out the Constitution, Bill of Rights, and the Federalist Papers and all that, they had no idea that we would have the kind of situation that we have today. Had we followed those principles, and we would not have what's going on today. You have innocent people all over the country in prison, ironically, and yet you have illegal aliens running around doing whatever they want in our country, and you have known criminals walking around. So it's not about justice, in my opinion, when it comes to the government. It is a source, in my opinion, of creating discourse between we the people. And I hate to say this, but when I look at your case that you all are involved with, not all of them are black. I believe one of the gentlemen is white. But I have seen a systematic pattern throughout our nation's history where they seem to go after individuals who are intelligent, who have a lot going on the ball, and they're not white. I hate to put it in those terms, but and that may not be the motive, but that seems to be the process. I've seen lots of people that have inventors. I know of a case years ago in Cleveland. I won't get into that, but the guy was locked up, and it was just a horrible case. He was also innocent of charges and got out of prison after many years and blah, blah, blah. But here you have another case where people are doing what they're supposed to do, using their God-given talents, making the best of it, coming forth with an invention that would help our society, help the government, and yet they turn around and you have the situation that you all are dealing with now.
And you know,
go ahead.
Ron, this is Sam. And, you know, one of the things,
hey,
even how you doing? I'm sorry I couldn't join you and Cliff the other morning. But as you're talking and you're saying there are so many people incarcerated, and it's aggravating when you think of Attorney General Eric Holder. He spoke before the ABA in August, and, you know, a flowery speech, and he's saying, you know, there are far too many people incarcerated for no law enforcement reason and that he's pushing for reforms. You know, the IRP6 case, and I'm sure that you know of other cases, fit perfectly with the profile that he's saying that some of these cases should have never been prosecuted in the first place. So they need to relook at how they manage their own house, so to speak. You know, it's not about what's right or what's wrong. It's not about legal due process. It's a numbers game. It's almost as if
It's also a political agenda, because when you bring up Eric Holder, you know, my stomach, I get sick when you bring up his name, because he's not about justice. It's about the Just Us Department. And giving the case in point, when it comes to illegal aliens and the guns that they sent to Mexico and all of that situation, they're not going after the real criminals in that scenario. What they're doing, you talk about justice or lack of therein, they're telling security agents right now on our border, look the other way, do not arrest illegal aliens that are pouring, streaming into our country. Okay? But yet, yes, if one of those agents decides to follow the law, he will be prosecuted and thrown under the bus, like they're trying to do to Sheriff Arpaio in Arizona, who has been doing nothing but holding up the law, protecting the citizens of that great state of Arizona, and they have been throwing everything at him except the kitchen sink, and I think that's coming tomorrow, to stop him from going after illegal aliens, which they're calling racism. Excuse me. They're always, that's another case. It's not like yours, but it is another case where people are doing what is good, and they're being harassed by this government.
Right.
And it's no good.
It just shows how much the government goes after their, you know, our own people. It's like, well, you say that a state can make their law, but then when they abide by that law, you want to prosecute them for it. You say that a man can go after the American dream, but depending on who that man is, what his skin color is, what his background is, what his ethnic upbringing is, you prosecute him for going after the American dream. So it's like they have their circle of these are the people that the law is here to protect and that can go after the dream, and it's okay. These are the people who can do what the law says, and then we give them a pass. But for the rest of you, for the rest of the American citizens, the rest of the taxpayers, the people who really, you know, the middle class that should be running the country, the people who say we are the majority of what America is, you people, you don't get to do it the way that we say that you do. And the reason is because we make the determination. When you people try to do something to better yourselves, will come after you with the entire weight of the federal government, which is totally, it's disgusting.
It's evil. It's evil. I'll give you a real crazy case. Years ago, when I worked in Cleveland, I was a news anchor, morning news anchor, and it was at a music station though. But our news department was really good, and every month that you'd have these promoters that would come through promoting the different artists, their music and everything. And there was one older guy, his name was Walt, he was a black gentleman, and he and I would engage in these conversations, and I was pretty new in the business at the time, and he'd come and rib me and stuff, and he'd start talking to me about, he'd start getting into heavier issues about the government and things going on behind the scenes, and if you get out of the box that they have for you, you could find yourself in a lot of trouble, blah, blah, blah. And I was more like, get out of my face, you know. We're here to do the best we can do. We're to be great. And back off. But he kept coming back and back, and he finally brought up an example of the Jackson Five. And he bought a series of pictures. He bought a series of pictures of cities all over the world. And in each picture, the streets were full of people, mostly women, girls, teenagers. And he pointed to them. He said, well, what color are they? And I said, well, Hamburg, Germany, they're white. Tokyo, they're yellow, I guess. Chicago, they were majority white, all over the world. And he says, there's going to be a big problem for them in the future. And I said, well, what do you mean? Well, the government or the controllers did not think that a black group would reach that level and be idols to females outside of the black race at that level. And that's going to be problematic for them. And I'm thinking, well, what do you mean? They're earning money. They've earned over $1 billion when you include everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, Ron, you don't understand. Watch, he said, just live and learn, and you'll see what's going to happen. And lo and behold, I believe that is what has happened with that family and with Michael, who even spoke out against the Illuminati in one of his albums. The record was called "They Don't Really Care About Us," and he had the Illuminati sign on the cover. And so you look at that case, and I know some other people in business that have been hurt dramatically because they've seemed to have gone out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
Cliff, when you were talking to me the other day about how they go after you if you're outside of the realm of an entertainer, a singer, a dancer, or whatever, or an athlete, where they expect blacks, they say, okay, you can be a dancer, and even in that, you can only go to such a level. But if you go outside of that box and are using your brains, they're going to come after you. And in my opinion, it is worse now in that realm than it was during the time of George Washington Carver and other blacks who are in history for inventing things. Because no one today, in my humble opinion, would be allowed to reach the level in that realm of a George Washington Carver.
Right. Yeah, they would
come after him. Because what George Washington Carver did, what a lot of people don't know, is when he brought forth all those inventions out of the peanut, what he also had discovered is that the peanut replenishes the soil. And so what happened, he turned around.
We got to take a break real quick, Ron. We'll pick you up on the other side of this break. This is Cliff Stewart with AJC Radio and our host, Sam Thurman, where we bring education, awareness, and information about the judicial injustice. We'll be right back.
This exoneree moment brings you the story of Herman Wallace of the Angola 3. The Angola 3 newsletter, published on October 13, 2013, states, yesterday, Herman Wallace was laid to rest after a memorial service befitting his liberation roots. New Orleans supporters, friends, and family came together to create a magnificent send-off for Herman, just the way he wanted it. As a proud black man who struggled for justice for himself, his comrades, his people, and all people, Herman wanted the remembrance to be in a community space and to provide a forum for many of his supporters to speak and, most importantly, to bring people together. Rest in peace and in power, Herman Wallace. The struggle continues. Then in an excerpt from an essay by Marame Kabe, it's written, Herman Wallace would have turned 72 years old today. Instead, on October 4th, he died in his sleep, his body ravaged by liver cancer. Wallace had just been released from a Louisiana prison 3 days earlier after having spent over 40 years in solitary confinement in a 6x9 cell. Among his final words, he is reported to have said, I'm free. I'm free. It's a minor miracle that he was able to die surrounded by friends instead of in a prison hospital. A judge overturned his 1974 conviction for the murder of a guard at Angola Prison and ordered his immediate release. Only a couple of days later, while he lay dying in a hospital bed, the state of Louisiana filed charges to re-indict him. There was actually a question as to whether or not he might be rearrested. Louisiana was determined that Wallace should die in prison by any means necessary. Herman Wallace of the Angola 3.
You're tuned to A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, joined with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. Also, we have the staff writer from the Maryland Daily Examiner on with us this evening, Jay Arrington, and our special guest, Ron Edwards. Ron, we got like about another minute to spend with you, and then we got to go to the phones here. Any closing thoughts, Ron? And before you do that, though, I'd also like to say, once again, thanks for having A Just Cause on with Cliff and talking about the IRP story.
Well, the honor was mine. I plan to have you guys on again. The thing is, the point I wanted to make is that after George Washington Carver, he brought forth the inventions, and he was replenishing soil for, and a lot of poor people in the South who owned land were utilizing these peanuts, and it was replenishing their soil. They were able to grow more crops and make money. Well, the big government, FDR, said they abolished that and banned people from growing peanuts. And so all these people went bankrupt and lost their land because
wow.
They didn't want those people. Those people weren't chosen to be prosperous, I guess.
Wow.
And so they were there to just live in nothingness. I guess that's what the government wanted.
Yep, just another case of how the government does, treat their own good and treat the rest of us like the dirt that the peanuts was grown in. That's Ron Edwards. He brings to the airwaves unapologetic truth, sure to keep his listening audience tuned in every time. He's respected by friends and foe alike for his consistency and originality in commentary. And the Edwards Notebook was voted best radio commentary for 2012 by the listening audience on WDTK. Ron, we thank you for being with us.
Thanks,
tonight,
Ron.
And we hope to get back on your show real soon.
Have a good evening, Ron. Next on the phones, we have Terry Young, one of our biggest supporters. Terry, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you guys doing?
Doing wonderful. Great. I understand you got a lot of things cooking and working on a lot of things, working with Olivia Hodges, part of our team.
Oh, yes. We've been really busy pursuing all the constitutional violations in this case. Mm-hmm. And initially I had trouble with the firms I work with because they handle only First Amendment religious liberties. And
but you know what, Terry, that triggered a thought, though. And so we started going after those attorneys that can support the Fifth and the 14th Amendment, the Sixth Amendment type things. And so we got folks that are pursuing that amicus brief. So even the fact that you brought it up, it got the wheels moving on that one.
Well, I've been in touch with Judicial Watch, and today I faxed them material. They do deal with the entire Constitution. There is a Department for Judicial Misconduct, and I'm in contact with someone in that department, and I faxed him the IRP 6 information today and gave him Olivia's phone number. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, if we can get Judicial Watch, they will sue. They write amicus briefs. They file Freedom of Information Act. So they have lawyers that can support the people handling the case. And they can also publish their monthly newsletter and include the case in that. So I think I've made some progress on that level. I also talked to a friend in Denver who has connections with radio and TV and print reporting other than the online radio shows.
Right.
So he is going to work on getting more publicity. I've got people lined up who, if there is a rally, are on board with the rally. Yeah, we've been busy.
Yes, so.
Sounds like it.
Terry, we're just going to have to deem you our Midwest representative out there.
That is fine with me. If it's wrong, I am not allowed to stay silent.
And that,
that's
and,
awesome.
And you know, Terry, that's what it takes. And you know, we coin a couple of or we recite a couple of quotes here on the time. You know, one is Dr. Martin Luther King, And he says injustice anywhere can lead to injustice everywhere.
Yeah.
And then you then you have Bishop Desmond Tutu, who says that if you remain neutral in situations of injustice, you sided with the oppressor. So, Terry, it takes you and it takes many folks like you and all the folks that you're rallying behind this situation to help to get that groundswell, that grass move, grassroots movement that we need in order to bring about change. And again, you know, you hear us talk about it, Terry. It's not just about the IRP6. This is about ensuring that we don't have a systemic problem that just runs totally out of control, because there are other people that are affected by this all the time. We hear other stories. And so what we're doing, and it, and when a just cause got set up as a result of the IRP6 case, we realized that, no, this is bigger than that. But, you know, Terry, your efforts are, gosh, I mean, words cannot express. The guys, the IRP6, they love to hear the reports that, that are coming from the efforts that you're involved in.
And let me say to that, this is Ethel Lopez, and we really appreciate you, Terry, doing, because we understand that, you know, now looking at this situation, this is what it's going to take, you know, for change to come about in situations such as this. Because you know, if we weren't, you know, beating the bushes and knocking on doors and doing everything we could possibly do, and happen to have found you, who is just there waiting, you know, and reaching out and doing everything that you can possibly do, you know, we wouldn't have found you. We wouldn't have had all of this. And we appreciate you being there to back us, to just do everything you can possibly do to help us out.
And also, Terry, you know, you made a serious point that when you see injustice, when you see wrong, you can't just not do something. And that's what we need the public to understand, is that, you know, do something. Send out some tweets. Reach out to people that you know. You know, just like you're going after these amicus briefs with the attorneys that you know. If there's somebody out there listening and you know some lawyers who, you know, would write an amicus brief, reach out to somebody. Say something. Make a phone call. Because that's what it takes. Because, you know, whether people realize it or understand it or not, the federal government is just there. Place where they can come after anybody they want to, that they can come after you, they can make up a reason. I mean, when you look at, you have corporate debt and the federal government is coming and saying that you conspired not to pay your bill, and so we're putting you in federal prison. That is totally ludicrous. So you say, if I lose my job and I can't pay my mortgage, I can't pay my credit card payment, I can't pay for my car payment. Now, you're going to say that I knew I was going to lose my job. I never intended to make those payments. And you're going to throw me in federal prison for
not
7 to 12
years? That's not within the jurisdiction of the FBI in the first place. You know,
absolutely.
I just came out of a two-hour seminar called The Death of Truth and the Decline of Our Culture. And one statement I wrote is, truth is the description of reality as it actually is. Reality for these men as it actually is a violation of law, a corruption of government and the judicial process, and that is the truth. And I have spent many years working with a group called Voice of the Martyrs. We work worldwide with people who are wrongfully imprisoned for their religion. They're tortured, they're killed, they're, you know. And now we see it in America. So I've gone after, you know, helping people in foreign countries. I don't want to see this in America. This is not my America.
Exactly.
You know, so,
well, Terry, you know, you have a platform here that if you if we need to do a show on some of those type of items, those subjects, then you definitely have friends here that will help you get that word out there as well.
Well, knowing this, that in letter writing campaigns to foreign governments, once they know you are aware that they have someone unjustly imprisoned, either at best the torture stops, the treatment improves, or they're released. We succeed, but it's, people have to know about it. So step one is we've got to get the word out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have lawyers, and I can help get more lawyers, but we have got to get the truth out there.
That's right.
Absolutely, and because to put the truth out there, then, you know, nobody gets it. Nobody hears it, and they can't pass it along, you know,
right.
And that's what has to happen. You know, in America, we say, you know, we have the best judicial system. We have, you know, we have justice. We have the best human rights. Let's not give any of these other countries anything to come back to us with.
Right.
The last thing we want is for some communist country, some country that's been proven that they destroy their people, they oppress them, they, you know, we cannot afford for those companies, the countries, to come back and say, well, look, America, you're doing the same thing. What do you have to say?
Exactly.
I mean, America always is playing the role of the global police. Well, we can't be the global police if we're found to be crooked police. We cannot do that. We have to hold up the, you know, the banner of what is right. And when we address the rest of the world, we have to address them right. We have to be able to say, look what we did. We went into our prison systems. We hunted down the men and the women that were innocent. We found them. We brought them out. We set them free. Mm-hmm. And we basically gave them their due when they got out. Now you need to do the same. You know, you see, like they say, well, let's all get rid of, you tell a country, don't have nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. Well, America, you have a stockpile. Mm-hmm. Why are you telling us not to have nuclear weapons? Because
mm-hmm.
you say you're going to do right with them. Start by doing right by your people. Let's start at that.
Hey,
right,
Terry,
do
me a favor, Terry, if you can provide information to Olivia with regard to some of the items that you want to get a little bit more exposure on, we can assist by, you know, getting, we got 30 volunteers. And I mean, I know you have connections with a whole host of folks, but, you know, we can at least assist and lend our resources as well. And so, you know, provide any information that you need assistance with as far as getting out there and, you know, email campaigns, letter campaigns, and so forth. We would love to help you out with that. Callers, you can call in. Go ahead, Terry.
In Pennsylvania, we have something called a Twitter Brigade, and on various topics, we bombard whether it's Congress, whether it's law enforcement, whether it, you know, whoever the target is. We write up tweets and invite people to join TweetDeck and schedule round-the-clock messages to go out on social media to inform people of an issue and then get them on board to support the issue. So a Twitter brigade across Colorado and across the country would not be a bad idea on this.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Excellent. We can get that movement going as well.
Yeah.
So callers, you can call in at 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. On the phone right now with us is Terry. I know you got to go. So any closing words before you jet?
I have to give a shout-out to Wayne Dupree and his show, because that's how I came to meet Olivia and learn about the case. And once I heard it, the burden was there. So God bless you all, and I am with you, and we will increase in ranks.
Thank
you
very
much,
Terry.
Thank you, Terry. Terry, have a good evening. We'll be talking to you again soon.
You too. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hey, Jay, are you – goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Jay, you're still there? You hanging in there with us, Jay?
Yeah, I'm still here. I just want
hey,
– can
so
you hear
Jay,
me, Sam?
Yeah, I can
hear
you.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yep, we got you.
Okay. But
hey,
I just wanted to say there in the movie JFK, there's a line in the movie that always stood out to me. It says, the authority of the state over its people resides in its war powers. And what
mm-hmm.
that really means, it doesn't mean it's war powers against other nations. It also means it's war powers against you. The war, it can
right.
wage a war against its citizens when it wants to. And we have evidence of that when we talked about how the FBI came in with the show of force, how they blackballed these young men and trying to get a job, how they pushed witnesses into saying what they wanted them to say. This is all evidence of their war powers that they can wage against us. And if we wait until we're prisoners to cry freedom, it's going to be too late. You know, we have to cry freedom while we have freedom. We can't wait to fight for freedom once we become a prisoner, you know. So we have to make sure that we stay on top of things like this and make sure that, like Terry said, that the word gets out, because people won't fight for what they won't, what they don't know about. They cannot fight for what they don't know about, you know. So we have to make sure that we stay strong on this, because, like I said, it's the war power that, it's the power that, it's the war that the government can wage against you. And you never know. You can be just like these young men were, pursuing a dream, doing everything by the book, following the natural order of things in business and civil and society, and all of a sudden you can run into somebody who has that ad hominem hate against you, hate for the man, hate for the color of the skin, hate for your progress, does not like the fact that you're upwardly mobile, that you're intelligent, that you have something going on. You might be a threat to somebody else's place in the world, and they will come against you because, like I said, they have friends, they have people in the places that they know where they can affect your livelihood. So you have to be aware of what's going on around you. And sometimes, like I said, you need to take your glasses off so you can see what you don't see. Because the glasses only help you see, what you're looking at. But you need to take those glasses off sometimes so you can see what it is you don't see. Because the things that you do not see are the biggest, have the biggest impact on your life. And like Hannibal Lecter used to say, people don't always tell you what they're thinking. They just make sure you don't advance in life.
We're on the phones with Jay Arrington, staff writer for the Maryland Daily Examiner, right here on A Just Cause Coast to Coast. The phone number is 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. So, Jay, shout out to your publisher, Reginald Kearney. You know, tell Mr. Kearney we really appreciate him giving you the print space to do this series. So, Jay, what can your readers and the followers, those who are following the IRP 6 case, what can they look forward to in the next part to your series?
Well, in the next part of the series, I'm going to follow the from where I left off was that I'm going to write about the actual court procedures that went on, what happened, why the witnesses were not called, talk about the missing transcript, which you released, a press release that you had out the other day, which I probably has over 150,000 impressions by now. We posted it on our website for people that want to go read it. We're also going to talk about a little bit about what we talked about tonight, about some of the meetings that did not take place. I'm going to talk about the motions, the 48 motions versus the 6 motions, prosecution and defense. The prosecution had that were all allowed, but none of the motions by the defendants were allowed. We're going to talk about complicity by the prosecution, the judge, and the U.S. Attorney's Office. Or the U.S. Attorney's Office, the judge, and Holland and Hart. That connection. We're going to focus a little bit on that, and that'll probably be next week.
Yeah, we'll look forward to that, Jay, because you know that's a lot, and it really does help to paint the picture and cover a lot of the aspects of the story. And Jay, you know, we'll be looking forward to having you back on the show from time to time as well. We don't want to, you know, tie up every week with you, but
it's not like I got anything else to do.
Well, you definitely bring some value from the journalist perspective. And the fact that, you know, you are looking deep into it. And
giving us a lot, too, to look at ourselves. You know, that makes it so much more important. Those areas that we might have missed or we might have overlooked, you know, we're so grateful to have you there for, you know, looking into those and looking at it with fine-tooth comb.
Right. We appreciate the fact that we can see that you've thoroughly dug into this case, that you've gone into the depths of it. You've done background research, you've looked at what's really going on here and brought it into light and made a story. Like you say, you know, you have basically a play and intermissions and everything. We appreciate that because it really gives the validity to how crucial this case really is, that it gets overturned, because it's putting everybody in the public light that, hey, this can happen to you. They can come after you.
They most certainly can. And again, ladies and gentlemen, it's been my pleasure. It's my pleasure to continue the fight. Because like I said, the last thing I need to do is wake up one morning and they're standing at my door telling me that because I sent a creditor a letter saying I couldn't pay him till next week and then I didn't pay him, that I committed mail fraud. You know?
Right, right, absolutely.
Because that's basically what they're saying. Oh, you told them you were going to pay him in a letter and or an email, but since you didn't pay him, that's mail fraud, you know, and wire fraud. Mm. That's basically what all they're accusing them of doing. You know, it's promising,
exactly.
promising to pay a bill through technology and letter and the normal mail process, and all of a sudden I'm misrepresenting and I'm committing fraud and I'm conspiring and I'm racketeering, you know, when all the time I have a bank account. I just don't have any, you know, I only got $10 in there, you know. Mm-hmm. So you're going to try to tell me that I lied about my bank account on just because I only got $10 in there? It's a viable bank account. I just don't have everything you want me to have right now. Same thing they said. I have the product. I just don't have everything they want me to have in the product right now. You know? As soon as I get everything
that's
in
right,
the product,
yeah.
Then they'll validate my – then they'll give me a contract. That's all. You know? I had a forensic –
that's right.
And,
Jay, we appreciate your time. You reaching out to us and being there with us. We will get back with you on the next program. This shows how easily that the federal government can come and get you. And people out there listening, you need take heed. Jay was just finishing up saying how, you know, they'll come to your door one day and say, you know what, you got some bills and we feel like you really never intended on paying them anyway. And guess what? Now, that's a federal crime. How is it a federal crime? Because we got these six men that we locked up in prison for 7 to 11 years for doing exactly what you're doing right now. They didn't pay their bills. You didn't pay yours. We're going to have to get you. You put a hand in, you make a call, you reach out, you send out a tweet, you get on Facebook, you do something, because they can come and get you next. I'm Cliff Stewart. My host is Sam Thurman, and we're with the Just Cause AJC Radio Online.
Hey, and just wanted to check some numbers here. Jay brought up the fact about the press releases that we just put out, and, you know, the one last week talking about the 200 missing pages in that transcript. Folks, go out to www.a-justcause.com, www.a-justcause.com, and you can pull up that now at 130,500. It's only been out there for a week, so that's 130,500 impressions. I mean, that is just saying that there are a lot of folks out there that are interested in this thing.
That's right.
We put out a press release today, and Tara talked about it in the news segment, where there was a writ of mandamus that was filed by Attorney Gwendolyn Solomon. Today, that one has hit, just today, and today is not even over. It's at 30,000. It's already at 30,000. I mean, this is crazy.
Yes, it is.
And so, but it does, it's doing exactly like Terry was saying, talking about. As far as, you know, you have to get the word out there.
Right, right.
And so, you know, we're using every resource that's to our availability here at A Just Cause Coast to Coast.
Absolutely.
Okay, so, folks, if you'd like to reach out to A Just Cause, again, it's www.a-justcause.com. Our toll-free number during the week, if you'd like to reach out to us, is 855-529-4252. 855-529-4252. You can follow us on Facebook as well. Like us on Facebook. A Just Cause CO. And then also follow us on Twitter at @A_JustCause. And we also have, you can follow us on Twitter at AJC Radio. And that's where you can follow Cliff and I. Okay, Cliff, take us out.
All right. We want to say thank you to our engineering group, KSD Productions, with Big Dustin Jackson, Captain Kyle. And we want to thank Ill Skillo's Girl for being there, getting all our programs laid out. Thank you to our... You wouldn't have everything laid out. Ethel, why don't you go ahead and the number.
Oh,
for
absolutely.
Mr. Holder.
Let me yell out Eric Holder, Attorney General Eric Holder's number. Please call him. Tell him. Investigate the missing transcript. 202-514-2003. Again, that's 202-514-2003. Eric Holder.
And we'd like to say thank you to all of our guests this evening. Terry Young. Also to Ron Edwards of Edwards Notebook Radio Commentary. And a thank you to Jay Arrington hanging out for us for the full 2 hours from the Maryland Daily. I want to say thank you as well. You've been listening to A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Thank you. Be sure to tune in next week. Cliff, Ethel, good night.
Good night.